Craven Cottage, make some noise for the team of the Fulhamish Podcast!
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James and welcome to the show. Today is the 22-23 Fulham season review. Who will we give our judgments to? Who was the best player of the season? What was the funniest moment of the season? What was the WTF moment of the season? Also, we're going to look back at our pre-season predictions. Who had some shocking takes and who had some quite accurate ones? There was definitely a bit of both for everyone. Also, a few of your questions and a final this'll catch on of the season. Hopefully we'll go out on a bang. I'm joined by the regular Thursday crew today. Jack Collins, hello.
Hello, Sammy. How you doing?
Good, thank you. And Peter Rutzler's back. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Sammy. Hey, Jack. How are we? How are we doing? We good?
All good. Season's over. Are you excited for a holiday, Peter?
It's not over yet for me. Not yet. There's another game to go. And then it's over. Then I'm going away for a week. So, yes, I cannot wait.
All right. Well, let's have a quick final word from Sunday's defeat to Man United. I mean, Jack, there wasn't an awful lot to read into this, except maybe the penalty debate rearing its ugly head once again. I thought Fulham were pretty good. Could have easily come out of that with a draw. United took their chances when they came and had periods of dominance. I mean, there was just so little riding on this match because, as we talked about in last week's Thursday Club, they won that game over Chelsea. Their position was secure. Our position was secure. We were kind of loosely chasing a points record, but it wasn't the biggest motivation. So kind of one of those. I don't think anyone will remember it for a particularly long time.
No, exactly. That's it, isn't it? It felt like that game. And there were moments in it where I think United were probably had the one eye on that FA Cup final, that they took their foot off the gas, off the accelerator at times. I think if Fulham go 2-0 up, we probably win that game. But generally, yeah, it sort of felt like a bit of a non-event, non-starter in many ways. And I think you probably look on the balance of the game result, probably fair, just about. But again, just hugely nothing on it vibes. I think everyone just kind of enjoyed their day, if I'm perfectly honest. So yeah, just one of those that, as you say, won't live long in the memory, I don't think.
And Peter, Ahmed wrote a piece about Kenny Tete, which I really enjoyed. And he was kind of the star of the afternoon, really. The 15th different Premier League goal scorer for Fulham this season. Only Bernd Leno and Anthony Robinson are the players that have played more than 1,000 minutes and not got on the score sheet. Over 500 minutes is Niskin Scabano, which actually is really impressive to have so many different goal scorers in a season. But anyway, that's an aside point. Kenny Tete, a wonderful headed goal and another brilliant display. And they talked about it on the Sunday podcast about how there seems to be so much interest in João Palhinha, and doesn't seem to be an awful lot being spoken about Kenny Tete, and I think the general point was good. But yeah, I mean, he's had a stellar season and deserves to be up there in all of the player of the season nominations. I don't think he'll get it, but he deserves to be in that kind of discussion.
He likes an end of season goal, doesn't he? He scored in the final home game last year against Luton, didn't he? Just belted one in with his swinger. But yeah, no, I completely agree. And actually, well, the first thing is I think the way Fulham play in the Premier League really suits him. It relies on fullbacks being very good one against one. I think Tete's strengths are his ability to tackle opponents, to keep wingers quiet. And Robinson's done really well as well on that front. He's quick and that's really effective for Fulham. But when you actually think of how much he cost the club, it's about £3 million, if I remember rightly. It's an incredible signing again, like that in terms of value for money. Leno was phenomenal as well, but you put Tete in that category. I know. I imagine Jack's going to elaborate on again the Dutch. He was snubbed again, wasn't he, by Ronald Koeman and the Dutch national team? But again, that plays into him just not really getting the plaudits he deserves. I think Fulham fans are giving him his due. Of course, there's been a lot of talk about Palhinha. Of course, there's been a lot of talk about Leno, but particularly among match-going fans, I can see his performances week in, week out, consistently against really, really high-caliber opponents. And his best performances are against these top level teams, it seems, as well. You know, he seems to really relish those games. And obviously, there was the Chelsea game, which is probably his best performance of the season. At the Arsenal game as well, away at the start of the season, I remember that, him doing particularly well that day against Spurs and that difficult game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So like they do, like he seems to step up for those games, and a rare goal from a corner. Actually, I was looking at it, Fulham were really overdue a goal from a corner. I think it's the first goal directly from a corner since the double against Southampton, the 2-1 win where Pereira scored from the edge of the box and Polina was at the back post, and that was a Tetti assist as well. So that's the first goal from a corner in 2023, I think. So, yeah, very much overdue, which you wouldn't think because Fulham have been so effective from corners. But, yeah.
It's because you revealed the blueprint, Peter. That's why it all went wrong.
I wasn't going to mention that because it was after that game that Silva said, you know, I know that some of you have been analysing our games and telling our opponents what we're doing. So, yeah, there was a little bit of that.
We never really talked about that on the podcast, that Silva seemed to get so irate about an article. It's like,
to be fair, he wasn't irate. He wasn't too irate. He was sort of tongue in cheek answering a different question. But yeah, apologies.
I was like, if Peter can work it out, I'm sure like Liverpool scouts can probably also work it out.
That's my logic. If I can see it, then surely everyone else can see it. But I mean, who knows of the competence levels in football these days.
Jack, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, it's the elephant in the room. For me, it's not a discussion about penalties next season. Again, I know that some people on the Sunday pod were saying we've got to keep on Mitrovic because he's our talisman and his confidence will be taken away. I just think we need to just grow up a little bit and give it to our best player. If it's Andreas, if it's Willian, whoever it is, it's just not his strength. He is so readable from penalties. Even when he scores, the keeper tends to go the right way. I don't personally feel like there's any debate anymore, but you may disagree.
No, I mean, I think that there was a fair bit debate to be had at the time because, you know, there are, you know, moments in this where you want, obviously, Mitrovic's confidence up, you want the team backing him. There also comes a point where you have to kind of like, maybe this isn't the, you know, the task for you. And I think there will be those discussions. They're obviously going to have to be done in the right way. But I do think there's an element also of the fact that I thought at the weekend he was actually very good until he missed the penalty. And then after that, it was sort of like his head dropped. And I think that there's definitely a point there to be made in that if that's going to affect him in the kind of negative ways, then you have to put that in the context of, you know, if we're saying you want him to feel confident and happy and that the team backs him, if there are these moments where then his head drops and we don't see the best of him for the rest of the game, is that actually far more of a negative than the idea of taking him off penalties? So yeah, I think that at some point this is a discussion that needs to be had. You know, Willian was a wonderful penalty taker for most of his career. So whether it's him or whether it's somebody else, I do think there's something to be to definitely be having a look at in terms of Mitrovic's penalty record and the unwanted record of becoming the first player to miss four in a single season.
I remember after the Newcastle game, we were sort of going through the ins and outs of the psychology of taking off penalties, what would be the right way to do it, should he do it? And it does feel sort of similar. But the stats, as you were saying, they speak for themselves. And I think I remember at the time saying, and I still think it's relevant, but I think we're at a point where it might need to be taken out of his hands. But the ideal scenario is he realizes it himself and, you know, there are better penalty takers. It's difficult for a goal scorer because you want to score as many goals as possible and it's an opportunity to score. It's just a 75% chance or whatever it is to boost your tally. I think, considering the opportunities he's had since, you know, this isn't the first that we have the same discussion in the Scott Parker season. So, it's a shame, but as Jack says, you don't want it to be detrimentally affecting. If it wasn't doing that as well, then fine. But, you know, if he scores that penalty, it's a different game and maybe Fulham get the win. So, yeah.
I think it's one thing to take a player off penalties mid-season. I think, like, that is a quite a snub. But over the summer, who knows who will sign as well? Maybe we'll sign someone with an exemplary penalty record. And that's the time, I think, like Silva says, look, we're going for a refresh. Mitrovic had lots of opportunities last year. We've got this player. We've really looked at it. And we think starting afresh in August, we're going to change it up. Really sorry. Like, I get that, like, after Newcastle would have been a tough decision to make, and like it really would have felt like a snub on Mitrovic.
I think, wasn't it? It's like, you know, it wasn't a technique. Well, he slipped. It's not the same thing.
This thing now it's got too much. I mean, we've had an email here from Glenn Holler in North Carolina. He says, I wanted to chime in on the Mitrovic penalty situation. On the Monday pod, the gang landed on a sort of shrug and oh well response to Mitro's missing of his fourth penalty of the season. Even after Elizabeth brought up the fact it potentially cost us 5 points. While I agree that it wouldn't have changed our league position, I can't agree with the attitude that it doesn't make a difference. If Mitro scores even one more penalty, so long as it turns a draw into a win, then that's our all-time points total achieved. I kind of like agree. Like, yes, of course, we were so far from any team, 5 points didn't make a difference. But I think, like, yeah, it was an end-of-season game. Ultimately, over the season, his penalties didn't cost us anything. But going forward, that's why a change is needed.
I think also that the last time Fulham played penalty roulette, it didn't end so well in the Scott Parker season. So if we're going to change it, we've got to be dead sure. We've got to be really sure that whoever's coming in is going to be solid, because otherwise it's just a bit farcical if that season's anything to go by.
Although I did hear, I have seen a couple of mentions of Tom Kearney on penalties, and I feel like people have got short memories. Tom Kearney was not that good from the penalty spot either. We went through a period of him taking the penalties and him either getting very lucky in scoring or not scoring. So
I'd really like Tim Ream to score a Panenka. I think he's taken one before, hasn't he? But did he miss?
Yeah.
I think he
might have missed. Famously, yeah. Newcastle away when we won 3-1 and we decided, oh, it's the 90th minute. Let's let Tim Ream take a penalty. Bonkers decision. Sess was on a hat-trick. Absolute ridiculous decision. But yeah, he's had one. I feel like that's probably Tim's lot. Sorry, Tim. You can take one in your testimonial and have some fun there. Let's do some end of season awards. So myself, Jack and Peter will nominate who we think should win each award. I also did a bit of a Google form. I was organized for this and sent it out to the people in the Fulhamish community in our Telegram group to collate some of their thoughts on what they think as to who should win each award. So we'll start with the obvious one, the pertinent one, the big one, player of the season. There are some big hitters that we know. It's probably a toss-up between Leno and Poligno, I imagine, in the popular vote. But Jack and Peter, you can pick whoever you like.
Yeah, I think it's probably Poligno for me, but I was so excited about this that I feel like it's kind of... there are other categories that I think we might be able to nominate Bernd Leno for. So I'm going to suggest that Poligno is the winner of this award for me. I think he's been absolutely sensational. He has become this one-man unit in so many ways. In the midfield, he has freed up Harrison Reed to do different things. He is capable. And you look, we looked at this last year and we saw that experiment that Silva had with Nat Chalobah and trying to make sure that the system was going to work kicking onwards into the Premier League. And we saw the kind of early iterations of it and how that didn't work. So to come in and be this good off the bat, to come in and basically be the glue that holds the team together. You know, you look at some of the performances where João Paulinho didn't play this season, and the difference in Fulham with and without him is so incredibly stark that I think for me, he has to be given the nod here for player of the season.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is really difficult with Bernd Leno. I wrote a piece on The Athletic, I think, last week about it. Because you look at Bernd Leno's numbers and they are ridiculously impressive. And I think one of the question marks about Fulham and why people have sort of sometimes not always given them as much praise as they could do is because the underlying numbers aren't particularly great. Fulham do concede good chances. But the reason that they've not conceded as many goals is Bernd Leno. Fundamentally, he's been absolutely fantastic. But I'm with Jack. I for me, Poligno just represents Fulham evolving into the Premier League. You know, the change in the number six position is just, you know, Jack was saying, Silva looking at how he's going to change things, moving on from Seri to Polina, really different profiles, making that work from the get-go. His influence has been, you know, really important. And I think everyone else looks better when he's in the team. And that for me is, you know, the staple of the player of the season.
I have flip-flopped between Leno and Polina so much in the last few days, but I've been trying to get my head around this. I did an article on BBC Sport and I plumped for Leno, but I think you two have persuaded me to go Polina. I think what you said there, Peter, is a player that kind of sums up this season and a player that I have loved watching. Like Leno's been great and he has got me out of my seat several times. That save he did against Leicester, I seem to remember in the first half where Vardy was just one-on-one on goal and it was looked like a certain goal. A couple of times Leno has just performed those kind of saves where you're like, oh my God. But Polina has got me out of my seat countless times this year. I've never enjoyed watching a defensive midfielder quite as much as João Polina.
I've never seen fans get up and start bowing, like directly for start bowing after a slide tackle. Like it's,
United at home this season was ridiculous.
Another.
It was just one of those where like you came out of it and like, little kids are talking about, did you see João Polina? Like that's not normal for a central defensive midfielder. Okay. It's got to go to Polina, hasn't it? But such a big nod to Leno, and we may come on to him. Right. Goal of the season. There is a lot of contenders here. Would you like the public vote first or second?
First.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll give you the top five. Joint fourth, effectively, is Polina's goal against Forest and Solomon's goal against Brighton. Mm-hmm. Third is Kearney's goal against Sunderland at home in the cup. Second is Willian's goal at home to Forest, the beautiful cut back into the top corner. And first is that man again, João Polina, with his goal against Leeds in the cup. I started with Jack last time, so let's start with Peter on this one.
Yeah, I went for Polina against Leeds as well. I think for me, it was obviously the goal itself was ridiculous. I was actually speaking to another French journalist who hosts PSG podcast out here. And he said he went to a Fulham game this season. It was the Leeds in the cup. And he saw the Polina goal and it was phenomenal. And his little boy was talking about it. And he was right behind it. So could see the swerve on the shot and the technique was fantastic. What I really liked about it was that there was two things, wasn't there? There was the tackle, which is just Polina-esque. And then he had the awareness to take the shot on because you could see Melier's position. You know, he's a couple of yards further forward than he'd ordinarily be. And yeah, he executed it to perfection. So yeah, what a beauty.
Jack?
Yeah, I think that's the correct answer. But my favorite goal was Tom Kearney's against Sunderland. I just really enjoyed everything about that moment. And I think, you know, you look at the way that game went and the fact that it, you know, at one point it looked like Fulham, we're going to be bowing out of the cup to lower league opposition. And suddenly TC puts on a, you know, footwork masterclass in the middle there just to wiggle his way through a few challenges. And I remember like fully on standing up and just being like, that is unbelievable. It wasn't even a cheer. It was just like, it was a round of applause. I was like, that is absolutely sensational. I think the Polina goal, as you say, is probably the rightful winner of this, but I did absolutely love that TC goal. So I'm just going to just give a nod to him, I think.
Could we do like a vibes goal of the season? Because Solomon wins that at Brighton. Because I that game was ridiculous, and like I remember laughing when he scored. But it was just so undeserved. Yeah, you can debate that, but just so against the run of play, it was so good.
I'm gonna go for an underrated goal that's not even been considered here is Solomon's against Leeds, which is outrageous. And the goal he scored against Wolves, he basically scored the exact same goal about 3 days apart. I'm gonna go for Willian's at Forest. That was just so amazing. It's been nominated for Goal of the Season by the Premier League. It's just outrageous technique, and he has so many players between him and that the goal, the only place he can put it is in the top corner. And is it harsh to say, I think he's the only player in our team that could do that. Like under that kind of pressure, there's the postage stamp is the only place that you can hit and you've got split second to do it. So I'm going to go for Willian against Forest, but I think all of them are worthy winners. I just think the technique on Willian's is amazing, whereas Polinius is an amazing tackle, an amazing strike, but I just think Willian's is just a bit of genius, effectively. So,
yeah, fair. Completely fair.
No, it's completely fair.
I think we probably know the answers to this one, but you never know. Performance of the season. So again, I'll go to the public vote on Telegram. In fifth, you've got Fulham's 3-0 win away at Palace. Joint third, you've got Fulham's 3-0 win over Villa and Fulham's 3-2 win over Brentford. In second is Fulham's opening day draw against Liverpool.
Yeah.
And obviously in first is Fulham's win over Chelsea. Jack, who would you like to give to performance of the season?
I genuinely think that Fulham 2, Liverpool 2 is the correct answer here. Now, I think you kind of look at the way that these games pan out, and maybe you could say the same for this game, but the 2-1 against Chelsea, obviously Fulham played well first half, and then it did look like there was a foothold being, you know, got hold of, and I'm sure we'll talk more about Joao Felix in a minute, but I do think that the red card really changed the whole game. And I think you could say similar about like the 3-0 against Palace away on Boxing Day, in that the game shifted on something that wasn't maybe in our control. I do think that the first half of that performance against Liverpool on the opening day was like, oh, Fulham are here and they've arrived in the Premier League. And I think that was the moment it was like, okay, this Liverpool team might not be as good as perhaps they have been in recent seasons, but to sort of that game out the way that Fulham did and the way that, you know, everyone felt afterwards, it was like, oh, hang on, we can hang with them again. And the kind of change from the last Premier League season to that felt like a massive step. So I think that for me probably wins it.
I'm the same as Jack. Yeah, no, I don't know if a draw can be season defining, but it felt it at the time just because it was really negative going into that game. You know, Marcus Silva's comments after the Villarreal game, recruitment worries, and then for the team to perform so well, it just changed everyone's perception of the team, like, instantly. It's like, oh.
The other thing that maybe should be mentioned here is the 2-1 against Brighton, because there were, you know, they scored from a penalty, but I actually think that maybe actually as a comprehensive performance, that was a side that had been winning plaudits left, right and centre, and Fulham absolutely fundamentally outplayed them that night. And I think that there's something to be said for that, because, you know, this is a side that's gone from strength to strength this year. Obviously, you know, we've beat them twice. Amazing. But I do think that, you know, as a complete opposite to the smash and grab at the Amex, there was a real control about Fulham that night, you know, and obviously it was just before Graham Potter left and all of those things in kind of quick succession. But I thought we were absolutely sensational that night.
Am I going a bit against everything that I think the 3-2 win away at Forest was one of the performances?
Oh, no, that's a good shout, I think, because look, just mentality.
That was the night for me. And look, we're going to talk about moment of the season in a minute, and that's, you know, another one. It was such an incredible night and stuff, but probably the moment was Solomon. That was the one for me. I was like, oh, my God, we're good. Like, we've come away from home to a team that has a very good home record, and we've won away from home this early in the season, and we went up to sixth. And I think that second half performance, the only thing that lets it down is the way that we let them back into the game with 5 minutes to go and stuff. So it's not like a complete performance. There's so many to choose from. All right, I'll stick with my guns. I'll stick with Forest away because it was amazing. But I actually really agree with both of you that Liverpool was season defining, and it's those moments that tip the balance as to, you know, Fulham lost that opening game 4-0. We probably would have stayed up. We obviously had quality and stuff, but I don't think it's the emphatic season that we all experienced. Moment of the season. There's actually only four nominations here from the Telegram community. In fourth were the quickfire goals against Forest. In third was the Solomon winner against Brighton. And joint first was Chelsea at home in general, and then the Mitro header against Brentford. Jack?
I will go for Brentford and then that game. I think that, you know, as you say, there was that moment and it being so late on and it having, you know, the effect it did. And the fact that actually Fulham had gone from being comfortably in charge of the game to actually under the cosh. And I remember being like, oh my God, can we just get out of this with a point? So then to win it at the death, and Polina bashing the stand with his sort of broken arm cast and all sorts of I think as a moment of absolute release, that was it for me. That was the moment I think that I was like, this is the best I've felt in ages. And so I think, you know, the difference with the Chelsea game, you know, it felt like it, you know, transpired over a longer period of time. Whereas the, you know, the joy and relief, I always say this, right? It's like Chelsea's always the one you want to win. Brentford's the one you don't want to lose. And so to be hanging on and for it to be Mitrovic and for Tony to have had all the goals ruled out and doing the celebration and then for him to win it at the death, the elation of that moment for me, I just loved it. I loved it so much.
Peter?
Yeah, it's hard to argue. I went with the Chelsea game. I went for Vinicius's goal specifically because it just threatened to be, you know, the chance was going to pass Fulham by. You know, it wasn't going to be a better chance than that, really, with Chelsea and the disarray that they're in and everything else around it. 10 men, you know, this was the time to win it. So I think there was an element of relief as well when Vinicius scored, and because it was Vinicius who, you know, it hasn't been easy for him this season. But to have that moment, for him to have that moment was really important. So I went for that. I can't disagree with the Brentford game, as Jack was outlining. But there's so many, like, you know, talking about Solomon earlier, like that was hilarious. Those 6 minutes, I think that's a really good shout for performance of the season, the Forest game, because it was a really mature and professional display against a team with a really good home record. That's when you're like, okay, Fulham are serious. They're serious. They're ruthless.
I'm going to go for Solomon at Brighton. It was just magic. And I've mentioned it on the pod numerous times, but Dan Cook saying to me, if we won this, it would be the ultimate smash and grab. And literally a minute later, it happened. I actually watched the highlights of it earlier whilst preparing for this. It's just so incredible. And the feeling in that concourse afterwards, and that's generally the thing you do at Brighton because the trains are so bad, you stick around in the bar at the stadium because you might as well. And everyone was on cloud nine, absolute cloud nine. I was going up to random people, just fist bumping them, just celebrating with people I didn't know. And like, obviously that happens often at football, but it seemed to particularly happen at Brighton. So I think there's three worthy winners in there. Brentford was just magic as well at the same time. And the bragging rights as well over, because there's no real, I don't find so much bragging rights over Chelsea. I don't know that many or whatever, but like Brentford.
They were just so bad as well. So like at that point in Chelsea's season, like I texted my, you know, some Chelsea supporting mates and I was like, and they were like, yeah, we're rubbish. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like there's no kind of bounce off it. Do you know what I mean? Whereas like being in the pub with my aunt and, you know, the Brentford lot afterwards and just absolutely like not being able to stop grinning from ear to ear. It was just like someday.
Yeah. Okay. This is a two horse race, I'd imagine, but you never know. Surprise performer of the season. Our Telegram community has gone for Willian second and Tim Ream first. There is an honourable shout there for Carlos Vinicius in third. Peter, surprise performer of the season.
Yeah, I agree with the Telegram channel. Tim Ream, I mean, again, going back to the start of the season, you know, the doubts around him, how he would adapt to the Premier League, the concerns about centre-half, you know, they were really strong feelings from, you know, within the fan base, among everyone really. And he's proved absolutely everybody wrong. It's a fantastic story, him going to the World Cup as well. It's such a shame he broke his arm, but he's played every league game under Silva that he's been, you know, available. He's been for me the surprise performer of the season, and long may it continue.
Jack?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just very much these two, isn't it? These are the two. And I think you could make all the same arguments that Peter's just made for Tim Ream about Willian as well, right? You know, the kind of ill-fated spell at Arsenal that he only had one good game and that was against Fulham. You know, you're coming back to this. He's struggled back in Brazil. It's been, you know, uncomfortable. There's question marks over whether we were even going to sign him then because it got to the final day and we were like, hang on, this guy's been training for 4 weeks. If we thought he was this good, why haven't we put him on a contract yet? And so there were all these jitters about it as well. And just some of the class, I think, that he has shown across the course of the season, it's been truly remarkable. You know, I think that in this kind of form, there's an argument to suggest that he'd start for 18, maybe 17 of the Premier League clubs. And I don't think anybody would have said that to you. You know, I remember having the discussion right at the pod, be like, look, if he's truly on the wages that we think he's on a very, very low budget, very low salary, just wants to be back in London, loving life. To have pulled that off, I think is pretty spectacular. So yeah, I'd probably edge William, but I think both are worthy winners.
I'm gonna go Ream. Although, as you may hear later, I actually backed Ream to have an all right season.
But, getting that in early.
Yeah, getting that in early.
Here we go.
But it is Tim Ream, right? No one. I thought Tim Ream would be a squad player. I thought he'd be our third choice centre back this season. I just thought he would be all right. Yeah, I mean, he's just been amazing this season, and I never thought he could do this at Premier League level. I thought on the opening day that Salah and Nunes and were going to rip him to shreds, and he just, at no point this season did I think Tim Ream's had a nightmare here. Like, occasionally, yeah, like he got caught out of position or something like that, but more often than not, Diop bailed him out. But every game he performed this season, and I'm really hoping he can do it again next year. So I'll go for Tim Ream. Right, we're going to the last couple now. Last couple of funny ones. First of all, his funniest moment of the season. The Telegram went for in fifth was the sailboat girl at Palace. I don't know if you guys saw this. It was quite funny. There's a girl who was sailing by in the cottage in the Thames, and it happened to be half time during the Crystal Palace game, and she capsized, and everyone was watching from the riverside and just giving her grief. And then she capsized the boat again, and then they were started singing "You Don't Know What You're Doing." And the people that were next to her in the boat were filming the whole thing. And to be fair, the girl took it very well. She was saying, "Just kill me now," basically, whereas like 2,000 people watching her sail this boat very badly, which was quite funny. In fourth, we've got Nottingham Forest's terrible minute silence for the Queen.
I forgot that. Oh my God. That was terrible.
It was almost not silence. I can't forget. I was like, has the minute silence not started yet? Like, what's going on? It's so loud. And everyone's shouting.
Wasn't it a kid that shouted? And then someone who was a lot older shouted something very aggressively.
Someone shouted, and then the mum shouted, "He's got Tourette's." Yeah, it was quite something. It was quite a spectacular video.
I never forget it at the time. I didn't hear the "He's got Tourette's" quip, but even so, it was just awful. Shane Duffy's cameo versus Leicester makes third. Fulham replying to Chelsea's "Name a Better Right Back" tweets with a picture of Kenny Tete holding his Man of a Match award got second, and Ivan Toney mimicking Mitro's celebration got first. Peter, straight to you, because I think the one that you chose for your Athletic article didn't actually make my nominations list, and I was disappointed in myself that I forgot about it.
Yeah, no, I, because it feels so long ago that you forget that it was actually this season. But Mitro smashing Tom Kearney's windscreen in the car park, then taking a selfie with it in the group chat and just not paying for it was glorious. And then showing off about it in an interview with Soccer AM. Yeah, that was for me the funniest moment. But there's been quite a few of other ones. Fulham had that farcical game against Porto Manense in the World Cup break, you know, and that friendly that they had where the opposition manager was referee and had to wear a bib and then gave his team an indirect free kick in stoppage time because George Wickens was holding the ball for too long. Because they were 3-2 down, so that was quite good. I was also going to say, in case that came up, I was going to mention about Silver in the Gantry, because that was, I really enjoyed that. Like, just journalists sort of like trying to see what he's doing, just rather than watching the game, just seeing what his reaction is. It's just exactly the same as on the touchline, exactly the same sort of body language, the shrugs, the groans. Yeah, that was good fun.
Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. The windscreen getting smashed, Tom Kearney pulling his own trousers down as well. Real fun moment. So I enjoyed that loads, although I'm not sure if that fits quite into here or or into the next category. So it's one of those.
I think it goes down as a funny moment.
I did enjoy that he just randomly threw his shorts to the floor when he missed that chance against Newcastle. So that was fun. I mean, completely and utterly like, what? But that was fun. But I really, really enjoyed the Shane Duffy cameo in news that will shock nobody. I think it was arguably funnier at Chelsea away, because he kept coming back down to the touchline. I think by the time it got to the Leicester game, everything seemed a bit like over the top. That actually the kind of 5-6 minutes of it, like incessantly at Chelsea at the Bridge, I really, really enjoyed. I think lots of things there, but yeah, I've enjoyed much of this season and I've been amused by Fulham a lot this season.
Yeah. There's definitely an honourable mention to João Palhinha constantly calling us cottages on Instagram, to the point that I now think that's our nickname. I'm gonna go for Nottingham Forest. Sorry, it just killed me at the time. I think it's the rightful winner for me. It was just so bad that it deserved to be the winner for me. Right, the final category is the WTF moment of the season. Basically, just I was struggling to think of the name for this category. I think this one's right. Bad, mostly bad things, but also I guess kind of funny in some degree as well. In fifth, you've got the whole performance at Crawley away. In fourth, you've got Mitro's double kick penalty against Newcastle.
Oh yeah.
In third, you've got the flamethrowers at Wolves.
Oh, yeah.
Same. Blood on their hands. In second, you've got the VAR against West Ham away. And in first, with like the majority of the vote, is Chris Kavanagh's triple red at Old Trafford, which I imagine will be the winner. But Peter, Jack, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Old Trafford's the right answer, isn't it? Like that. I mean, it was just completely what the fuck. You genuinely were sitting there thinking, what has happened here? Like, how is this, the sort of shock of it means that, yeah, it's a clear win. Just everything, like, just seeing Silva go over, it's like, why is he doing that? Oh, he's been sent off. And then, anyway, let's not dwell on that. We've dwelled on it a lot. I really like the Crawley shout. And I was going to mention Tom Kenny's shorts, because that also fits the bill. But it was also funny, so... But yeah, Crawley, just overall, like, that was just dreadful. I mean, when you had Tom Kearney sky in that corner as well.
the away end. The corner. Oh, God, that was my cue to go home.
Yeah.
That was so bad. I was like, come on, Tom, this is the one opportunity. We can't lose to Crawley. Oh, wait, no, it's in the car park.
Yeah, that was just shambles, isn't it? I enjoyed the honourable mention here. I mean, obviously the answer is United, but I did enjoy Nat Chalobah's cameo against Newcastle. Enjoy is probably the wrong word, right? But like, it was just all so obvious from like the moment it happened. You're like, oh no, oh, we've seen everything now. And I think that, you know, you could see him flying in for it. And though I said at the time, I stand by it. I feel a bit sorry for him, because he was obviously trying so hard to put in a performance, to stand up in João Palhinha's absence, to show his worth. And you could just see the tackle coming. You see the tackle coming, you're like, oh no, oh no. And then it was like, okay, cool. Well, that's that then, isn't it? And then the absolute shambles that followed it as well. That was real bad vibes. I did want to give it an honourable mention.
Yeah, my honourable mention, because we all agree, I think, on the winner, was the flamethrowers at Wolves. Honestly, someone should be doing jail time. Someone should be doing jail time. I still haven't recovered emotionally from what they did to me, sitting in the third row. Never been so hot in my life. It's the closest I've ever felt like to being in an oven, just with the gas being turned on. I was like, oh my God. They are our awards of the season. Please let us know on Twitter if you agree or disagree with any of our choices. I think we'll post them up there as well. That'll do for part one. In part two, we'll look back at some of our predictions. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Hello, it's Sammy here, and Fulhamish is backed by NordVPN, which is a way of watching sporting events, TV shows, and films which aren't available in your region by just switching your virtual location to a country which is showing the event. And right now, we've got an exclusive deal which you can get by going to nordvpn.com/fulhamish. They'll give you a huge discount off your plan, plus 4 additional months all for free. Now, my dad actually had a perfect usage case for NordVPN the other day. He was out in Spain, but he wanted to watch the match of the day highlights of when Fulham beat Southampton 2-0. So he knows I've got an account. He dropped me a text and I gave him my logins. And that's absolutely fine because you can use one NordVPN account on up to 6 devices. So he logged into NordVPN, switched his location, and watched Alexander Mitrovic bag on his return in glorious Technicolor on his iPad. Now, NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, and there is a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you decide it's not for you, then no worries. To get that exclusive deal that I mentioned of 4 free months plus an additional discount, head to nordvpn.com/fulhamish. That's nordvpn.com/fulhamish. Part 2 of the Fulhamish podcast. It is Sammy here with Jack Collins and Peter Rutzler. Just a quick one to say thank you to everyone that continues to back Fulhamish in the Fulhamish community. Your support, if you're in there all season, we are indebted to you. You keep our podcasts, articles, videos all going, all funded, and it enables us to keep everything free, which has been our aim since day one. So thank you to everyone. You really, really are so special to us that you do that. So thank you very much. If you'd like to support Fulhamish, all the details in the description of this podcast, or you can go to fulhamish.co.uk/support. As a thank you, you get access to our Fulhamish community, which I mentioned earlier. And it's a Telegram community where we chat all things Fulham, and it's a thank you to everyone that supports us. All the details in the description of this podcast. Thank you ever so much. And we're planning on keeping the podcast rolling all through the summer. More details to be announced. Let's look back at our pre-season predictions. Here we go, ladies and gents. These aren't as bad as I hoped. There's a couple of shockers in there, but I actually think we did quite well, probably because we were all quite rose-tinted about Fulham's chances, and that turned out to be a punt that has worked very much in our favours. So I'll run through them and we can react to what we said. So the first thing that we asked was Fulham's final position in the league table. Jack, you said 16th and 39 points.
Would that have been right?
You wouldn't be far off. Peter, you said 17th and 38 points. I was Mr. Optimistic. I said 15th and 42 points. So all of us massively underestimated where Fulham would finish this season and how many points that we would get. I guess that's natural, but Peter, we didn't think we'd go down. So,
well, I remember sort of umming and ahhing about it on the pod. I remember umming and ahhing, going, "Oh, well, you know, it's going to be close. It's going to be tight." And so wrong. Which is a good thing, but yeah.
So next one is the amount of goals that Mitrovic would get, league only. Jack?
I think I said 15.
You said 15, and then you went and clarified 11 non-pen, which he scored 4 penalties. So you were basically one open goal away from being unbelievably spot on. Peter, you said 14 goals. And I said 15 goals. So the gold medal here definitely goes to Mr. Rutzler.
That's what I'm paid for.
Spot on. Spot on. That's
I mean, great. What you probably couldn't have accounted for was an 8-game ban in the middle of it. I mean, being injured for half the season. But so actually, if anything, we underestimated him because we know that if he'd have played all the games this season, he would have got a lot more.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we did. I think we probably did because you look at the goals per game rate. We missed a third of the season. So, and the injuries, we're still scoring with his injuries around, you know, that after the September international break with Serbia. It didn't really seem right until the turn of this year and getting back into the flow of things with Fulham. So, I do agree.
The next category was second top scorer. Now, this is a bit unfair, this second top scorer, because one player that would be in the reckoning, there's the joint winner, was not on the books when we made this prediction. But anyway, Peter, you said Manu Solomon. Jack, you said Bobby Decker Dover Reed. And I said Andreas Pereira. Now, we are all exceedingly close, basically. So the joint second top scorers were Carlos Vinicius and Willian, both with 5 goals in the Premier League. And then Andreas Pereira and Bobby Decker Dover Reed and Manu Solomon all had 4 goals. Yeah. So they were joint third.
Solomon, if he played more, you know, I'd back that. But,
yeah. You
know. I'd probably say the same for Bobby, to be fair.
Yeah, so basically,
Bobby played in all but 2 games. He had more than enough.
He did have some minutes. He did have some minutes. Fair play. Fair play.
I think we all came fairly close. That's and we couldn't okay. have I'll known about that. Carlos Vinicius.
He didn't
and
exist.
Actually, could we have known about Willian?
He wasn't officially signed. Yeah, I think that's right.
We knew he was around, didn't we? But yeah.
Well, we didn't know if we were going to actually make him a player or not. It was back to that old argument of like, if we haven't signed him yet, why not? But yes. Good. I'm pleased enough with that, I'll be honest.
This is where it gets a little bit messy. Relegated teams. Jack, you said Bournemouth, Everton and Southampton. Peter, you said Bournemouth, Brentford and Southampton. I said Bournemouth, Leeds, Brentford.
I don't think any of us have come out particularly smelling of roses.
I mean, well, we look stupid.
That didn't go well, did it? Yeah.
The Brentford one makes us look very stupid.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't say
that. Yeah, but it's second season syndrome and all of that.
Doesn't
know,
exist
no
anymore.
Erickson.
You should read The Athletic, Peter. Fifth season
yes,
syndrome.
I know. It felt sound at the time. It went well with the audience. So
yeah, it did. I was maybe playing to the crowd a little bit. I think that, you know, each of us managed to get a relegated team in there because Jack and Peter, you both said Southampton. Jack, you were obviously exceedingly close with Everton. And I did say Leeds. So we all got 1 out of 3, which isn't bad. And everyone fell into the Bournemouth trap in pre-season. And I think everyone was right to think the Bournemouth would, considering where they were in the summer. And fair play to Bournemouth for proving everyone wrong. Top 4 in order. Jack, you said City, Liverpool, Spurs, Chelsea. And in quotes, you said, I think Chelsea will sort their shit out.
Narrator.
Oh, yes.
They didn't. That's a bad prediction for me. Yeah, that is not good at all.
You called the winner at least. Peter, you said City, Liverpool, Spurs, Arsenal. I said the exact same.
A lot of Spurs optimism there, wasn't there?
We've really not covered ourselves in glory, have we? They did have Antonio Conte in charge at the start of the season. Chelsea had Thomas Tuchel in charge. Things have changed, is probably how I'd put it.
To be fair to you, Jack, they did just keep signing people. So you didn't know that was going to happen. Yeah,
that's not great vibes. We'll move swiftly on, I think.
You should maybe hang your hat on your ranks record of predicting league winners, Jack, because that is obviously an incredible record that you guys have managed to keep for several years, but maybe don't hang your hat on the top four one. No. Fulham player of the season, you can hang your hat on this one, Jack, probably. You said João Palhinha. Peter said Bert Leno. I said Alexander Mitrovic.
It's not bad. It's not bad going.
Take that.
Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Obviously, we don't know who's going to be the player of the season yet. Probably going to be Palhinha. Like, I think he'll win the public vote. But yeah, I mean, my one with Mitrovic. I still think my one with Mitrovic, I mean, the Old Trafford thing cost him any chance of winning player of the season, because as much as we will love him and forgive him, like, that obviously didn't help, and all the injuries and stuff. But he did still score 14 goals this season, so he's still up there. The final one is the Fulham hot take. So this was just anything that you think could or might happen in the season. Peter, take a bow. Do you remember what you said?
Yeah, yellow cards for João Palhinha, wasn't it? Yeah,
João Palhinha to get the most yellow cards in the league. What a call.
That is a cracking shout.
That's what the research is for.
Did you put some money on that? You could have. You probably wouldn't have to work for a year if you put a sizable chunk on that.
That was amazing. That's an incredible shout. Well done,
Jack. This is not one that you'll love to hear back. It was a very noble shout. Jay Stansfield to make 12 appearances off the bench.
Yeah.
Could have happened.
We did go and sign another striker, so you know that was. That'll give myself a little bit of grace, but. He got a couple in the first couple of games, didn't he? So,
yeah.
I mean, he probably did make that, just not for Fulham.
Yeah. He had a great season for Exeter. He so nearly scored in that Brentford game, didn't he, in the very first minute where it ended up being Bobby's goal. So I think it was a reasonable shout. Mine was that Tim Ream to make more appearances than expected and be okay.
Yeah, I think you've undersold him a bit, but yeah, that's okay. Yeah. That's all right. It's a good prediction. That's fine. I don't mind that.
That was quite, to be fair, at the time, that would have felt, you know, quite an optimistic, I think.
Yeah, quite bold
thing to put forward. Yeah,
I felt bold at the time making that, and now it sounds like, oh, it's all right, Sammy. Be okay.
Well, he was. He was okay.
That's really.
He was fine.
He was more than okay. There wasn't
more than okay.
Yes, indeed. He was.
So yeah, they are our predictions. I mean, gents, I think that's quite good.
Wasn't that bad? Yeah. I thought it was going to be a bit more, you know, apocalyptic, but it's all right.
Yeah, Peter, right. I feel like you are the star of the show there, Peter. To say 100%. That Mitro would score exactly 14 and to get the Palhinha yellow cards thing is pretty special. Jack with Palhinha as player of the season is a very, very good shout. And we each got a relegated side. The less said about our top four predictions, the better. But then again, that's not what we're here for. There's plenty of other pods. And also, everyone got the top four wrong this season. So it is very much not us. Right, we're going to take another break afterwards. We'll do a couple of questions and then a quick This'll Catch On. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Peter and Jack. A few questions from the inbox and then a This'll Catch On for you, the final one of the season. I like this one from Ashley Mayhew. He's come at us with a few different questions, but I think all of them are quite good. So Ashley asks, any word on a contract for Willian next season? He's been absolutely sublime. Do we know anything about Willian's contract? It's surely in the offering, Peter.
Nothing I can bring you right now, but... yeah, it feels quite positive, I think, regarding Willian and the direction of that. So, sort of watch this space. There's quite a few decisions to be made, you know, in the next few days. I think there's conversations have started to be had slash have happened. Even that left wing position is interesting because you've got Manor Solomon who can now leave for free because FIFA have extended the right for foreign-based players in Ukraine and Russia to suspend their contracts, which is what he did last summer. You can do that again. And the difference now is that once he does that, this is his Shakhtar contract, he will be a free agent because his Shakhtar contract runs out in December. So, there's a lot of interest in him as well, particularly from Tottenham. So, with Cabana's contract up, Willian's contract, there's decisions to be made.
Yeah. His next question is, how about Lavia from Southampton? Jack, I mean, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I would love that, but I think he's going to go for sort of 35 million to a top six club, if I'm honest. So I would be very surprised if we're in that conversation, but we've pulled off some transfer coups before. I think that he would be a wonderful addition, but I just think he might be a little bit outside of our gettable range right now.
I guess, is there a chance maybe if it's the food chain, if someone did pay all the money for Polina?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe, but I just can't see it. I think United will be in for Lavia. I think Chelsea will be in for Lavia. There are going to be bigger financial players, I think, in this conversation than us. And I think that would probably sway him, even if it has been a good year.
And Peter, he says, any detail on the extra pounds we have to give Arsenal because of Leno's exceptional performances? I mean, I think the understanding was 3 rising to 8.
So with Leno, yeah. So it's 3 million up front, as we've talked about a lot, and how good value that's been. Then there are installments of £2 million for every season Fulham stay in the Premier League over the course of his contract, pretty much. So it's £2 million this year that Fulham will have to pay. £2 million then if Fulham stay in the top flight again. And then, sorry, I'm going to have to do it again. I've got that wrong. Oh. Yeah, so with Leno and the deal with Arsenal, it was £3 million up front, which we've talked about a lot for being extremely good value, as has been proven emphatically. Then there are a couple of different installments. So Fulham will have to pay £2 million to Arsenal for staying in the Premier League. That's for one season. And then if Fulham stay in the Premier League next season as well, then they will owe Arsenal another £2 million. And then the other clause that takes it to £8 million overall is based on his total Premier League appearances. That's another £1 million. I don't know the exact number of Premier League appearances, but my hunch would be in between the two seasons. So, So that's the thing. I think at this rate, it will go up to £8 million, but even at £8 million, it seems like a ridiculously good signing.
It's almost like all of those kind of caveats that we have to pass to pay some money are all very much worth it. Staying in the Premier League, £2 million, absolutely have it. Making 100 appearances or whatever it is, have it. It feels like an outrageously good deal. One final, this will catch on for the season, that I will give to Jack and to Peter. It comes from lovely Rick Cardis. I have met Rick a couple of times. He said, Sammy, I've been sitting on this song for this will catch on for months. With Fulham coming to the States this summer, I figure this is the time to debut this surefire hit. I hope everyone enjoys God Bless the FFC. So he's basically taken God Bless the USA and changed it for Fulham. Go to the States in July. And so we need to get ourselves in the mood, and hopefully this will do the trick.
Proud to be full American, where our captain is Tim Ream. And I won't forget Brian McBride or that boy Clint Dempsey. And I'll gladly stand up in the hammy end and defend the cottage today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this club. God bless the FFC. And I'm proud to be full American, where our owner is Shahid. And don't forget his bumbling son, Tony. And I'll gladly stand up in the hammy end and defend the cottage today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this club. God bless the FFC.
Wow.
God bless the FFC. God bless Rick Cardis.
Indeed. God bless Rick. I enjoyed that a lot. I'm doubtful of its ability to catch on, I'll be honest. But I did enjoy myself immensely. I'm not even going to bring out the syllable police because I had a fun time. But It was I struggle with Damien singing it, I'll be honest.
But could it catch on in America? Could it catch on at the US summer tour?
Who knows, Sammy? Maybe you can lead it.
Yeah. apt moments. We've had a lot of emails about this, and we are working on trying to do a Fulhamish live appearance in Philly and DC. So we're hoping to do like a live podcast out there in both cities. I don't think we'll make it down to Orlando. It's extremely expensive, but we're looking to get to Philly and DC. We're speaking to Fulham, which is the Fulham Philadelphia supporters club, and the Fulham DC supporters club as well are helping us try and organize some kind of joint parties between ourselves and them, and yeah, all details TBC. If you've got a couch that we could sleep on, we'd be extremely grateful, because we're trying to do it on a budget. But yeah, we're more details TBC. If you fancy coming along though, drop us a note. We'd love to see you out there if we can make the stars and stripes align.
Nice.
That'll do for the podcast today. What a season it's been, Jack Collins. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Sammy. It's been a real pleasure.
And Peter Rutzer, thank you.
No, thank you, Sammy. Thank you, Jack. Thank you for keeping me on in the season, even when I've buggered off. So it's very much appreciated.
Oh, we love getting you back on when we can, Peter. It's always a treat for both of us. So as I mentioned, Fulhamish is going to be continuing at least for the next few weeks. In a few weeks, we're going to be launching a new weekly transfers show where we're going to be looking at all the latest rumours and stuff. That should be starting in a couple of weeks. And hopefully the Thursday Club will kick off back in July, but until then we've still got loads of podcasts. On Monday you'll hear the Jack and Joe Show season review. We've got the second ever Fulhamish annual coming out this time next week, where we kind of document the season via the podcast. We've also got a whiteboard season review. There's loads of good stuff. Keep looking at the podcast feed. We're trying to keep going this whole summer, because we know that you guys are going to be on a beach somewhere, chilling out, missing Fulham. And so we want to keep the pods rolling for you. So that's very much our intention. But the Thursday Club will be having a little bit of a hiatus. We should be returning in July. But I won't say have a lovely summer, because we will be speaking to you before then. But enjoy the summer. And hopefully you can keep listening to Fulhamish during that time. Have a wonderful weekend, whatever you're doing. Come on, you whites.
You whites.